Imagine a photographer pulling out an old-fashioned 4x5 field camera, like something that your great-grandparents' wedding photographer would have used. But this one is fabricated out of fun and fruity-colored 3D printed plastic, laser-cut panels, and scavenged optics. Archaic technologies and a traditional approach to visual arts are being revisited and revitalized thanks to 21st century fabrication techniques.
Welcome to Augmented Humanity. Our guests are modern explorers working at the intersection of technology and the humanities. They help us to understand ourselves and the worlds we create in this digital age. They are thinkers, creators, makers, and academics working in diverse fields like linguistics, technology, game and object design, and ethics.
I'm your host, Ellen Dornan.
And I'm your host, Craig Goldsmith. We're joined on this program by Ethan Moses. Ethan is a maker, designer, and fabricator specializing in some of the oldest forms of chemical photography. He utilizes state-of-the-art digital fabrication techniques like 3D printing and laser cutting to create cameras based on old designs and expired patents. He is a regular contributor to online magazines and blogs about chemical photography like Emulsive, Film Shooters Collective, and 35mm. Collective. He teaches chemical photography techniques online and at makerspaces. Ethan is also a member of the board of directors of QLab, a makerspace in Albuquerque. His company, Cameradactyl, makes 3D printed film cameras and accessories for the general public.
Welcome, Ethan. Thanks for being on today.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
I kind of wanted to start looking back at the history of photography. Earlier today, you showed me some 1910 era technology that you've re-envisioned through the magic of 3D printing. Going back, what did early photography look like?
What do you mean? Like, all film photography at this point is like kind of early photography, right?
It's all archaic.
Yeah, on the scale of man, it was like a blip between when they went from the invention of photography of tarnishing silver plates through a pinhole or something like that to today where we have digital.
Let's talk about two of the cameras that you make, the 4x5 field camera and the pinhole camera. So when were they first used? How do they work?
Pinhole cameras date back to the camera obscura, which I think the Greeks and the Romans, maybe the Chinese, knew about thousands of years ago. The introduction of photosensitive paper or plates kind of really made photography take off.
Just so we're clear what we're talking about, a camera obscura or a pinhole camera is a box with a pinhole in it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The light goes through the pinhole and then kind of projects on the back wall of the container.
Yeah, exactly. The pinhole is just sort of a geometric limitation. You can give the light to make it focus some sort of clear image.
Then photography really is the ability to capture that image.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's really putting these two things together, the optics, and then you've got something that is light sensitive so you can capture that image. And the first photography happened sort of when?
Let's say a little bit before the Civil War. So 1830s is when people start making like wet plates and things. Before that, people definitely had success on like little silver plates and daguerreotypes, and Henry Fox Talbot made some salt prints and paper prints a little bit later. But yeah, it became common in Western culture to have photographers around by the 1860s.
And for you, why the paper photography? Is this what we call it now? Is
chemical analog photography?
Analog photography.
Yeah.
And what do you find compelling about that as a process rather than just shooting with a digital SLR or cell phone?
Well, so I do both. I do all three for sure. But I don't know. I had a lot of film. This is less philosophical, but I had a lot of film left over from the days when I bought and sold cameras, and I thought I'd work through it. I like building things a lot, and there's some digital camera projects that I'm working on, but it might take me 10 years and only cost $3 million for a camera that, you know, you could buy for $800.
What's the appeal for the people in your community?
So the appeal is different for a lot of different people. And I try not to be one of these guys who like has the sharpest lens or like the most recent whatever, but I'm also not one of these guys who's like, I use the oldest process. I wax my mustache and I, you know, I'm shining silver plates every day. I think there's everybody in between. mean, and the reasons are far-reaching and varied. For me, again, I don't think I've done so much introspection as to put my finger on what the magic of film is.
Well, here's your chance.
Yeah, right. I don't know. I really enjoy it. I really enjoy, like, old mechanical devices. I enjoy that I can build them. And film does all of the work of your digital camera in a product you can buy.
Right. You know? Do you like the darkroom process also? Is that part of it? Because building the camera and taking a picture in these old ways is one thing, but then there's all the post-processing.
Yeah, darkroom work is fun. I don't think it's like the number one reason why I do it. Sometimes I'll send my film out if I'm busy, but it's an interesting part of the process. I really like teaching the darkroom processes to people. It's kind of like magic when people first discover it, usually. It's a very sort of simple thing to show somebody in 20, 30 minutes.
I'm curious to what extent you favor the output of your film cameras, and especially some of the cameras that you're building, because I know looking at the examples online of, say, from your pinhole camera, they do have a very otherworldly, old-fashioned-y, I mean, even like the picture of you pitching your tent looked like it was from a Civil War campaign.
Sure. I generally just build pinholes as demos. Like, the cameras that I really love to build take what I would call modern optics, right? They take lenses from professional film cameras from the 40s through the 2000s. And so one of the most interesting things to me when I first started 3D printing cameras is that it's basically just a black box, right? And the pictures will look like whatever lens you put on it. And you could go to eBay and buy all of these great old lenses for peanuts to a lot of money, depending upon what you found. I don't know, the otherworldly pinhole stuff, this is not my art. Right? I like shooting with them. They're fun sometimes. As for output, like, the things I like kind of look like digital pictures by the time you're done.
I don't know about that. I mean, I only say this because when I saw you recently down at one of the makerspaces, you had crafted a 8x10 paper camera out of laser cut panels, and you were developing prints, and the portraits that I saw didn't look like any digital photograph I've seen. Well, I mean, maybe if you ran a bunch of filters on it.
So one, digital is getting better every day. Apple AI is incredible. They're not quite there, but yeah, so what you saw was actually a bunch of prototypes that I've been working on, but basically, this actually might be interesting to you. I'm going to go on a tangent right here. Do you guys know about the 20x24 Polaroid?
The large format Polaroids? Yeah, that's a darling of the art world for decades, and then the film stopped being made.
Yeah, and then Supersense started cutting it up into 4x5s and selling it to people for $10 a picture one by one, which is interesting, but there's not very much media left, right? Well, so Polaroid made this thing. They made 7 of them from the late 70s to the early 80s. And it was just sort of like a loss leader advertising thing, you know, let Andy Warhol shoot a 20x24 picture or whatever. It's good advertising.
There are people that may be listening to this that don't actually even know what a Polaroid is.
Polaroids are almost instant film and paper packs that you take a picture onto and then eject through some rollers, which smush some chemical dye between the paper and the negative, and then it self-develops. You know, in about a minute and a half, you have a instant picture.
Without a darkroom. So the 20x24 Polaroids became difficult to get a hold of and was actually a really big deal. I remember when that happened, when they stopped making it and all the artists were freaking out.
Yeah, particularly Elsa Dorfman, known for using that camera. I'm a really big fan of her work. So I've been sort of thinking about and working on this process to, I don't know about replace, but replicate that sort of thing, right? I can make one or two of these as an advertising thing for Cameradactyl and maybe a few for some crazy customers who want a 6-foot-long camera. But I've been working on direct black and white positive reversal prints or direct color reversal prints. You can shoot a picture on regular print paper. So if you were to go to Walgreens in the 1990s and get your negatives printed onto 4x5 paper, that paper is basically the film emulsion wiped onto or sprayed onto a piece of paper rather than a clear plastic base. And so when you print the negative by projecting light through it onto the paper and expose the paper to the negative image, it makes a negative of a negative, which is a positive. And so because of this property of photo paper that it has a photographic emulsion sprayed on it. You can put it directly in a camera, any camera, that you can cut a piece of paper small enough to put it in. It's a little bit slower and has some limitations. But traditionally, what people would do is take that photo paper, develop it, get a negative, and then either re-photograph it or contact print it, which is sandwich it with a new sheet of paper and then project light through the old negative and then develop that and get a positive. So this is sort of like a long and arduous process, but I've been working on a process by which you develop a piece of paper shot in exactly the same way inside of a camera, but when you develop it, you know, one shot, it's a positive. And I've made some YouTube videos. I'm not going to get into the, you know, chemical reversal process, but if you want, you know, it's a 5.5 minute video to show one of them and maybe 10 for the other. What I want to do now is build a film holder or a paper holder that is also a developing tank. So basically you could shoot a picture on a piece of paper with a large format camera, pull the film holder out of the back of the camera, tip it on its side, and then pour in some chemistry. Now, it's maybe not as elegant as squishing gel packs of chemistry in this giant 20 by 24 Polaroid, but I think it's something you could do without a dark room and that produces a print in 5 to 10 minutes, depending upon the process.
It's very quick chemical photography developing, and you could do it in the field or on your tabletop without a dark room, like we used to do with Polaroids.
And if you build a big enough camera, you can make really big prints, like a 20 by 24 or even larger.
So it begs the question, I mean, aside from the love of the process and the challenge, which I, as a maker myself, I certainly get, what is it that's compelling about this sort of technique or process that isn't offered by, say, modern digital photography?
Yeah, so it makes a really unique looking thing. If you're using the black and white process, generally you're using orthochromatic film, which is only sensitive to, like, let's say, the blue spectrum of light. And so things like reds show up as black. For example, my red beard shows up as a black beard, but it also makes people look very ruddy, which is useful sometimes and not useful others. Also, being shot on a giant camera has a really shallow depth of field, which is very challenging to work with, but also, if you do it right, sometimes is very beautiful. The color process has some wacky results, again, some which I like, some which I don't like. None are extremely like digital cameras or even smaller film cameras. A 20 by 24 camera is maybe going to be 6 feet long. I'm not going to carry it around on a neck strap. I'd probably use it for some project. I'd try and take a portrait of every one of all of my friends and then put the thing away or ship it to somebody. But there's some aspect to it that's almost performative. You know, I'm not exactly a performer, but people love interacting with that sort of camera. And for what reasons, which is really your question. But for me, it's nice to sort of show people that moment when, like, you take a print out of a tray and then you pour a chemical on it and it goes from white to having a color photo on it, or from a negative to a positive, depending upon the process. People are into it, but also I think it lays bare the processes of photography so people can really see what's going on in any camera, right? But it's at a more human scale and time frame.
I think there's something really crucial there. And I've seen this where you've shown a few of your cameras and had people kind of interact with them, and then you can see the process and you can understand the process. I mean, a little kid can actually understand, whereas with a digital camera, really is just a magic black box. But what you said I thought was really interesting about photography almost as a social dynamic. I mean, it's been a long time since I've seen people crowd around a camera because the camera itself becomes this sort of object of interest, and the taking of the picture becomes a really kind of intense interaction.
Yeah, I think good photography shows you things that you don't see every day, and that's really not just photography. It's like new and weird things are interesting. It hasn't been around. If we were in 1950, I don't think people would take so much notice of a film camera, but it's something you don't see every day. And I think that's a good teaching tool. And I think it's a good sales tool, because ultimately at the end of the day, I'm trying to sell all these things on the internet.
Right, right. You said something there also really interesting. You said it shows you something new about the world, about ourselves.
Well, good photos to me is something that you don't see every day. And that could be because it's taboo, because it's far away, because it's taken in a dangerous place because it's something rare going on, because it's an extinct animal or a previously thought extinct animal. Right? These would be all interesting pictures that I would look at. I don't usually get to take those pictures. When I lived in New York, I just carried a camera everywhere because I was guaranteed to be surprised by something on the street. That's what I love most about photography, which has nothing to do with whether it's shot on a, you know, Nikon D8. You know, I don't care what camera, if it's an interesting photo, and which is sort of maybe not what you would expect to hear from a guy who sits around making cameras all day. I love making cameras, but and I love making cameras that I like to shoot with. But yeah, I feel like my love of pictures is almost very separate.
Well, but that's sort of what brought you it to begin with, which I think is probably a nice place to leave off this segment. For more about Ethan Moses and his work, you can visit cameradactyl.com. Augmented Humanity is a program of the New Mexico Humanities Council, produced in partnership with KUNM FM. You can visit us online and find out more about our programs at nmhumanities.org. Our theme music comes courtesy James Whiten, and we've had production assistance from Tristan Klum.